Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great podcast, Swagoo and Perk, an ESPN podcast led by its namesake host Marcus Spears, Swagoo, and Kendrick Perkins, with new episodes every Tuesday morning. Spears and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as a look inside their lives, career journey, with can't-miss conversations. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcast, and also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Also, we are so excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, tipping off the start of the NBA season with exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinee Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today. 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, going to hit you with one of the biggest surprises in the NFL. Also, your stories about horrible job interviews. But first, what a wild weekend in college football. And ain't nobody even really talking about no games. Now, we had talked last week about the whole Brian Kelly going to Notre Dame, Lincoln Riley going to USC, the moves and all that stuff around those things. And as you know, we tape Foxworth Fridays on Thursday morning. So things that happen on Thursday, we just not necessarily in a position for you to hear on Friday because of the laws of physics and everything else, right? We want to get that to you early on Friday so you can have it during the day. So that kind of cuts into what we can do in terms of when we can record it. Okay. So it dawned on me that that meant that me and Dominique had talked about Brian Kelly going to LSU, but we did not get to talk about Brian Kelly putting on that fake accent. Gabe, did you peep when Brian Kelly put on that fake accent?
Yeah, I also heard the kind of like side by side of like him saying family in a Notre Dame presser and then him saying family out there on the floor.
Mm-hmm. I just want to know how long he's going to keep it up, right? Because like I used to know somebody who I met him one summer and they talked like they was from California. And then I met him the next summer and they talked like they was from London and then acted like nobody could tell it was a difference. And I just like, how long are you going to keep that up? Like it's been almost like 15 years since I've seen this person who suddenly started talking like they was from London. And I don't know, do they still do that? You know what I'm saying? Like have they held this up all the way across? I don't know. Like, I feel like Brian Kelly, once you in on this, you can't back out, baby. You got to be this guy forever. And he did the damn Hollywood thing. Well, Hollywood think everybody in the South talked the same way, right? So like Kevin Spacey, whenever he played, you might remember Kevin Spacey, guys. He was once a very, very, very famous actor. And then we learned things about him and he ain't here no more. Anyway, Kevin Spacey could be in A Time to Kill. He could be in, The House of Cards, right? He's got the same Southern accent for South Carolina as he got for Louisiana, Mississippi, whichever one it was. I think it's Mississippi, right? Like he's got the same one. It doesn't work that way, right? There's a bunch of different ones. And so Brian Kelly is going down to LSU. And I imagine that at first he was like, I'll just try to talk like Ed Ogeron. And then he got in the mirror and was like, oh no, I can't do that, right? Like there's only one. Your throat gonna bleed if you try to do that every day. And then he got up there and he was wearing, it looked like he might have even been wearing some Wranglers, right? Like they told him to go all the way with it. And he was, you know, my family. And I'm like, dog, they don't even talk like that down there, man. Like, the white folks don't even talk like that down there. I'm just telling you, they don't. Like, you need it. What's that dude's name? Emerald, the chef? He do TV, right? Maybe you start, like, Brian Kelly looked like he watched The Last Waltz. You know what I'm saying? Go get it, kick it like Dr. John. You're not going to come down here like, oh, he just did it completely wrong. But anyway, Gabe, have you seen how much money they paid that man? Look. I'm telling you right now. First number I heard on Buddy was $9 million a year, right? These are per Ross Dellinger. He said if you add, there's a $500,000 bowl game bonus. Keep in mind that before this year, LSU went to bowl games 20 years in a row. And it's a $500,000 longevity bonus, and I honestly don't understand what that means. But anyway, with that in mind, here are the numbers year by year on this contract. 10 million, 10-2, 10-2, 10-4, 10-4, 10-6, 10-6, 10-8, 10-8, 11. Promise to him. You understand what I'm saying? Like that's $10 million to come down there and coach LSU. And so this is the thing that gets me about this, okay? The place that he just left looks happy that he's gone. Nobody at Notre Dame seems to be sad that he left. Nobody's heart was broken. Nobody. Like, I think that people think about it like when college football coaches leave a job, they think about it like dad's leaving the house. You know what I'm saying? Right? And they look at it like, wouldn't you be sad if your dad left? And it's like, I'd be sad if my dad left. I don't know if you'd be sad if your dad left. Because I've met your dad. I wouldn't want him to be there. I know some of y'all, like, maybe when you was younger, like, that happened when you're 4 years old. But, like, you 15 years old, you old enough to realize your pops is an ass? Yeah, please, leave. Dip out. You know? That seemed to be the case what happened here with Brian Kelly. They just promoted, you know, uncle to new dad, right? Cool uncle to new dad. And everybody was like, yeah, we don't even need daddy no more. Boom, everything was straight up there. Meanwhile, LSU paid that man $10 million of change per year to come down there. And you're going to hate him. Nobody likes him. Nobody does. I called a former Notre Dame player and I was like, hey, man, is there anybody that likes this dude? And the answer was no. Yet they paid him $10 million to work a job where Ed Orgeron and Les Miles have won national championships. It doesn't cost you $10 million to get a national championship caliber coach. It doesn't. A coach that can win a title where you are, it doesn't cost that kind of money. You didn't have to do this. You did not have to pay this much money for this guy. But I get why they did. And it's not because of how good a coach Brian Kelly is, who, by the way, is a very good coach. Like, let's not pretend about that part, right? You know why they're spending all this money, Gabe? Because they got it. Think about this for a second. We forget that, like, the world is still the world. Like, this college football stuff, as much as anything else, is affected by the world, by, like, the larger economy and everything that's going on. What have rich people been doing during this pandemic? Getting even richer, having even more money, watching the value of their assets go up, watching the values of their homes go up. And even the people that may not have necessarily been that rich in the first place, a lot of other people got rich in this off the crypto and all this other stuff. Suddenly you have a giant line of equity that you can pull off of your house based on the home sales that have been going on. Like, we have seen there's a whole lot of people that's out here hurting and a whole lot of people out here struggling in the face of this pandemic. And we have also seen the super rich get even richer in this time, right? And I was talking to somebody about the crypto and somebody was like, well, how many people that are getting rich off the crypto are college football fans? Number one, that's really largely a sports gambling population that's playing a whole lot of those crypto games. So don't get that twisted. There's some overlap there. But number two, do not assume that those people who talk about crypto all the time are the only ones that are playing around with it, right? Like, if I was worth like $20 million, which I'm not, just to be clear, if I was worth like $20 million, I would have put like 20 G's in crypto 7-8 years ago. And that 20 G's I would have put into Bitcoin, for example, would be like millions of dollars now, if I'm not mistaken. That would have been a reasonable thing if I'd had that kind of money to play with. Why not, right? So these rich people have been getting super duper rich. And this is the kind of stuff they doing with it, right? Like, for example, you know, I'm doing this stuff with HBO. Did a show with Bob Costas. Got a TV show that's coming up. I still got my job here, right? I ain't doing this HBO stuff for free. They paid me some money. And so what that money was, I could treat myself. You know what I'm saying? And so I went and got a super fancy record player, a super fancy amp, and super fancy speakers. I decided to treat myself, right? More money than I ever thought that I would spend on such things. Less money than I could spend on such things. Not because I have the money, but I'm saying they sell really expensive stuff. You have no idea, okay? But I treated myself to that. These fools are treating themselves to football coaches. Like, that's what this is. You want to feel even more unsettled? This weird situation at Miami where they just disrespected Manny Diaz on levels I can't possibly understand in order to hire Mario Cristobal. Miami, which has been notoriously, like, they just don't spend money. Like, on football, they have not spent money because they were able to be successful without spending money because they had the most priceless commodity, which was talent. And then the playing field got leveled on that, and they never wanted to step up the bread because they've never really cared that much about being good at football. Right? They were willing to be good at football. They were cool with being good at football. They ain't want to be good at football. They ain't need to be good at football, right? This ain't Oklahoma. This ain't Alabama. They didn't have that kind of drive for being good at football. I'm not judging them. I'm just telling you that's what the difference is. And now they look at that paying $8, $9 million for Mario Cristobal, who, by the way, to me, it seems very clear he doesn't really want this job. He's willing to take it. I think he's got a set of circumstances in his life that might make it attractive. Like, I don't want to be too presumptuous because I don't know the man, so I don't want to get too deep and pretend like I know his life. Cristobal played at University of Miami, if you didn't know, and is from the area, and his mother is sick, right? So I could, like, totally see wanting to be closer to home, to be closer to her. But this is what I'm telling you. If that man wanted to coach at the University of Miami, you ain't got to throw $9 million in front of him. You don't. An alum, right? Somebody with a real attachment to the program and all of that. You don't have to throw that kind of money at that dude in order to get him to go there. Like, Oregon has put a giant contract in front of him that's of like similar money or whatever. But I just feel like if he really wanted to go to Miami, then you just go to Miami. You say, I'm coming and we'll work the rest out. If you're that guy talking about going to Miami. But one thing that's happened with Miami is they're starting to use money from the University of Miami, like healthcare system, and putting that money into the football program, which is a little unseemly. But I don't know if you've heard, but a whole lot of people have needed healthcare this year. Somebody's making money off of that. And that money is going to the football coach.
I even saw something else that said that the University Health System got sued doing things that were a little over the top.
Oh, really? So Miami. And don't forget, also, Miami is becoming the crypto hub. Like, let me tell you something right now. I hadn't really thought about this. I ain't lived in Miami now in almost 5 years. But ain't no city more just, nothing scream out crypto like Miami, right? This is just a get-rich-quick scheme. No city is more ready for a get-rich-quick scheme than Miami. Mayor of Miami talking about we gonna be the Bitcoin city. That's how you know. That's how you know to watch out. Just telling you right now, be careful. You know what I'm saying? But that's what this is. So I'm imagining they talk about they got some billionaires now in the Miami booster class that, you know, are talking about putting down some big money. Miami also, and this is, I guess Notre Dame might be similar, but Miami, one big difference between Miami and every other college football program, I feel like, is they are more than anybody else depending on donations from people who are not alum.
By the way, they just let go Manny Diaz.
Oh, they just let him go?
Yeah.
They finally decided to let him go. As we speak, we get the word that they let Manny Diaz go after they've been getting ready to give his job away for all this time. Like, come on, man. Y'all could have got rid of him early. The idea that their plan was, if we can't get Cristobal, we'll keep Manny. Or that's what it seemed to be. Yo, you can't live like that. Like, this is over. He can't do his job. It's not even a matter of pride as much as it is. That's just stupid. And it was a poor way to do business, right? They should have let him go. But they giving all this money to Cristobal because they got it. Like, this has been a boom time for these people and all the people that need all this money in the world. And we just going to give it to football coaches. You know, and look, I get it. It's just like people get to do whatever they want. You know, I'm not trying to be like, what about the starving children? I don't want to sound like that necessarily, but I want you to understand where I say that this is connected to the world. what we're seeing go on in this world and in this country in particular is a staggering increase in levels of income inequality. And what we're seeing is the people that already had everything are just getting more of it, but they don't have anything to do with it. And so what you're seeing now, Ole Miss is paying Lane Kiffin $7.5 million a year now, right? Like, so it's one thing. I still think it's kind of wild that LSU is paying $10 million a year to Brian Kelly, okay? But that at least is still LSU. LSU and Ole Miss are not the same. Ole Miss will probably never win an SEC championship for the rest of our lives, right? Like, we're talking about something different there. They've got that kind of money. The University of Texas at San Antonio has almost $3 million a year to pay for their head coach. Like, that's what's going on with the money right now. That's how it's blowing up. Gabe, Oregon was willing to pay Cristobal, because you're up there in Oregon. They were willing to pay Cristobal like $8, $9 million, right?
10-year deal.
They have a stadium that holds like 50,000 people. You understand where I'm coming from here? Like, this is ridiculous. This is so ridiculous. And all those years, they've like, we don't have the money to pay the players. Now, again, they got more money now than they had before. Don't get me wrong. But what I always said when they were like, we don't have the money to pay the players, these people would love to pay the players. Like, do you think these people, I've been dead up, do you think these people would enjoy giving that money more to Brian Kelly than they would enjoy giving that money to their favorite player? Or to the roster? Like, do you believe that? Because I don't. But watch what happens with this money. Gabe, you've seen this in Miami. The boot, like, people, I don't even know if they boosters, fans, whatever, they've been transparent about it. They want to use NIL to basically be a payroll system. Like, they're coming up with these NIL deals for the whole team. There was one group in particular in Miami, I think it was a gym or something like that, and they were like, yeah, we want to do this so that we can pay players, so that we can be better. Everybody wants to pay them because everybody wants to be good, right? But they just keep trying to come up with ways to not have the school actually have to be the one to pay the players. But look at what this money is now. Look how ridiculous and out of control this is. And the transfer portal and everything else is that's going to go and so forth and so on. Like, hey, man, if you want there to be anything sentimental about college football, I'm just telling you it's impossible at this point because money's just gotten to this place. It's just, but I'm wondering, like, what's the next deal that somebody's going to get that's going to wind up being the mind blower, right? Because here's the thing. Once Ole Miss pays $7.5 million for a coach, Mississippi State, when it's time for them to get theirs, you know, when they fire Mike Leach, how much you going to have to pay now? You Arkansas, how much you going to have to pay now? And up and down the line, up and down the line. And again, Miami doing this, and I swear, he'll take that job, but he don't want it, and he's not that good.
Doesn't Saban have some sort of like most favored nation deal?
Yes, 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 he does. So basically, every time all these cats get a raise, Saban get a raise.
Isn't that like the coolest concept if you're the person who gets it?
Well, what I love about it for Saban is basically the term in that contract might as well be like 35A, Roman numeral 1, italicized 1, right? Don't play with me. That's all it comes down to. Don't play with me. You know who I am. You know what time it is. Don't play with me. Hey, Gabe, speaking of Nick Saban, we do owe him an apology. Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, you need to apologize, but, you know, you apologize for getting the game wrong or whatever it is or something like that. And Georgia had been great and Alabama had not necessarily been great this year. But this right here is why I'm saying this. Okay. I know it had been a dicey road for Alabama. They lost that game to Texas A&M, which had been playing as backup quarterback. They almost lost that game to Auburn, who was playing as backup quarterback. However, we collectively sat up here and picked Nick Saban and Alabama to lose a game to a team that was quarterback by Stetson Bennett the IV. You see what I'm saying? You feel me here? Like, go up and down the list of quarterbacks who have won games as starters against Nick Saban's Alabama team. Go look at it. Other than that dude at A&M, and honestly, I don't even remember that dude's name. Like, the worst quarterback to be the starter and win a game against them would probably be Jordan Jefferson, who kind of did it twice. He didn't start the second one, but he kind of did it twice. We're talking about, like, Jordan Jefferson, who at least was a four-star recruit, Steven Garcia, Bo Wallace, Chad Kelly. Like, those are the names of the guys that we're talking about that have been starting quarterbacks for wins over Alabama. Stetson Bennett is the – no, 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 no. Like, Nick, we owe you an apology for that, right? And in that same vein, I don't owe him this, but I feel like a lot of y'all owe Bill Belichick an apology. I do. Not a real apology. Come on, you know, because I wouldn't be apologizing for no shit. But I do think this. Tampa Bay won a championship last year. Patriots missed the playoffs. And the Patriots, how many players they have? Like six or seven players who didn't come back because of COVID, you know, who did not decided that they did not want to play, like whatever the number was. And it wasn't insignificant players. They decided not to do that. And so this year, the Patriots, by the time you hear this, might be the number one seed in the AFC. Monday night, they play against the Buffalo Bills. And I mean, so much credit is going to Mac Jones right now. I have watched the Patriots play enough to say, he's not bad, right? He seems to make good decisions. He seems to be like more in the Chad Pennington mold to me, but it's a lot of dink and dunk. Like, I don't think that's a team that can win a Super Bowl because I just don't think he's going to win a Super Bowl dinking and dunking. But it's a lot of dink and dunk. But with the Bucs winning the Super Bowl last year and the Patriots missing the playoffs, people really were, was it Brady or was it Belichick, right? Like, we got into these deep tones about that stuff. Have you guys seen Cam Newton play any games with the Carolina Panthers? Because he looks done. Like, he looks no way around it done. He looked pretty done after COVID last year. Patriots went 7-9. And the quarterback looks done. 7-9. And somehow you ain't think that had nothing to do with Bill Belichick. This year they're out here with your mans, Mac Jones. And they look like they might be the top seed in the AFC. Are you not entertained? You know what I'm saying? Like, this brings it back to the man. This is Bill Belichick. Every bit as good, apparently, as he has ever been. Perhaps a bit more conservative, but every bit as good. And something that I think that people always forget about with Belichick is when you ask the question as to whether or not he could win without Tom Brady, the answer is yes, because he won without Tom Brady. It's just that when he was winning without Tom Brady, it was with Tom Brady. I understand. It sounds like it doesn't make a great deal of sense. Let me explain. Now, perhaps you believe that Tom Brady just has some mystical thing in him, right? He's just got this thing in him that makes him Tom Brady. And it doesn't matter actually how good he is or not at a given point in time. He's got Tom Brady in him. Except Tom Brady in 2001 was not the same as Tom Brady in 2004, which was not the same as Tom Brady in 2007, which is not the same as Tom Brady in 2011, which is not the same as Tom Brady in 2015, which is not the same as Tom Brady in 2019, which is not the same as Tom Brady in 2021, right? He's the same person, not the same player. I think you'd all agree and understand that that's perfectly reasonable. I don't believe that Tom Brady really started becoming Tom Brady in the way that we talk about him. Maybe 2004, but like definitely 2005. Patriots won two Super Bowls with that lesser version of Tom Brady that they kind of had to protect, but you could trust the fact that he wasn't going to go out here and do nothing colossally stupid. But that wasn't Tom Brady. In fact, I contend the best version of Tom Brady never won a Super Bowl. Patriots did not win a Super Bowl between 2005 and 2014. I would argue that the prime of Tom Brady comes within those windows. Within that window, rather. And they didn't win a Super Bowl at that point. It's not because Bill Belichick couldn't coach, because this stuff is weird. But no, that man don't need Tom Brady in the way that we tried to act like he did last year. Now, do I think they're going to win a Super Bowl with Mac Jones as the quarterback? Absolutely not. I think the three teams in the AFC you got to look at are Buffalo, Baltimore, and Kansas City. It's not hard to figure out why. Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen. Like, they got quarterbacks that can get out here and make plays. Obviously, I feel the least certain about Josh Allen And you could say, yeah, they beat Baltimore in the playoffs last year. Yes, but that Josh Allen panic gene still remains. Like, Lamar's throwing more interceptions in, like, kind of, like, what are you doing decisions that I've seen before. But the Josh Allen panic thing still worries me in spite of his improvement over the last few years. And he hadn't been great this year. Like, I ain't no need to, like, go over the top about it, but he hadn't been great this year. But, nah, man, what Belichick is doing right now, that defense is like a Patriots defense. Go look at the DVOA and all of that, right? Like, the Patriots right now are playing like one of the three or four best teams in the NFL. And y'all tried to act like that man suddenly didn't have nothing for you just because Tom Brady didn't play for them anymore. Nah, baby, that's not. Mm-mm. That ain't how the game goes. Speaking of the game, I just want to say right fast, what an awful, awful, awful set of games they gave us on Sunday. My goodness, it was so terrible. They're so bad. Like, I'm glad that Baltimore and Pittsburgh, like, actually turned out to be a decent game. But the 1 o'clock slate, you know, I live here, so we got the Giants and the Jets. Then I went on the Sunday ticket, and the most interesting game involved the Lions, who won, by the way.
How many decent games are there, would you say, on a weekly basis? One?
I think before the bye week start getting in, you can normally get, like, in the 1 o'clock time slots, you'll normally get a couple. At least something, like, there's something in it for you. Like, it doesn't have to be a great team, but something in it for you. I feel like the 1 o'clock slate didn't have anything in it. And then the 4 o'clock, you know, we'll all get the one game that's worth it. And then maybe, you know, regionally there's another one. But I was just stunned going through this. And it was like, how do I make myself interested in this game? And it's like, it wasn't, the closest I could do that with were the Chargers and the Bengals. Like, those are two pretty good, interesting teams at this point. But I wound up with the Vikings and the Lions. Good job, Lions. Tell Jay Leno to kiss your ass. If you haven't heard, it's part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back. So are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper. The one fans deserve.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo. This first story comes from tech.
How much money would it take to convince you to become the face of mall robots around the world? If you'd be willing to do it for $200,000, you can apply now to sell exclusive lifetime rights to your face and voice to Russian robotics company Promobot. The only requirement is that you have a quote-unquote kind and friendly face. Promobot claims that the robot has been commissioned by an unnamed American supplier for airports, shopping malls, and retail stores. They hope to release it in 2023. Before you sign up, you might want to look at Promobot's previous models. The company is behind a waxy, zombie-like Arnold Schwarzenegger head as part of its Celebrity Companion robot line. They also created a Pixar-like COVID-19 bot that appeared in Times Square, asking people if they had a cough. But disturbingly, this might all be part of a face recognition scheme. Promobot boasts about its face recognition services, which should be alarming since the robot they're advertising will appear in public spaces like retail stores, where face recognition is already common. If you're interested, though, Promobot is considering people of all genders and races over 25. You can apply to sell your face on their website at promo-bot.ai. This has been Whitney Kimball for Gizmodo.
Okay. I just need to gather myself as I okay this to death, right? I know $200,000 is a lot of money. I do. I realize it's probably not appropriate for me to try to tell you not to take $200,000, okay? Do not give these people your face, man. I'm just, don't do it. Nothing good gonna come for you with that. Don't. Like, it's bad enough that you dumbasses were giving your blood and DNA over to these people for free so you can find your roots, like you gonna like it matters or something. Like, you're gonna go, oh, I found out I have Polynesian in my family. Good for you. You know what I'm saying? Put a lay on and dance. I don't care, right? You don't care either. It ain't changing. Now, what if I want to commit a crime one day? I can't. Why? Because my brother decided that he wanted to get to the bottom of something. I can't remember which one of those he sent it in for. Now I can't commit no crimes, ever. I might need to commit a crime, not because I'm a criminal, but because circumstances. You know what I'm saying? It's entirely possible. I might need to steal some bread to feed my family. I might need to steal some bread to feed my brother. since he decided he wanted to find out something about the family or something. I don't remember which one of the things he did, but I feel like he did it. Anyway, he may not have actually done it. And if you didn't, I apologize, dog. But you get where I'm coming from. You be leaning in. You got Alexa. I mean, I feel about that. You know, Amazon tracking me every time I'm at your house. Don't do that stuff, man. You know what I'm saying? And don't. Like, imagine if I went to steal some food to give it to my brother and they found my DNA and they come to arrest me at his house. He ain't gonna say nothing. There's the bread right there. You didn't tell me you stole that bread.
This next one comes from business.
This is Matt McFarland from CNN Business. The indoor cycling craze has come for America's kids, and child development experts aren't happy. Little Tykes, the children's toy maker, watched sales of Peloton stationary bikes soar last year when the pandemic hit. It saw a chance to create something for children to enjoy alongside their parents. So this summer, Little Tykes released the Pelican, a stationary bike for children ages 3 to 7 with a screen attached for viewing videos. We didn't want the parents to be the only ones having all the fun. Our commitment to inspiring an active and imaginative lifestyle among kids sparked this idea. Little Tykes Vice President of Product Development Kevin Bloomfield told me. Stationary bikes have existed for kids before, but have not lasted. Toymaker Fisher-Price launched a $150 stationary bike for kids in 2007 and updated it in 2017. Fisher-Price then cut the bike's price to under $100 and now no longer sells the bike. It declined to explain why. Child development experts caution that a stationary bike, especially one with a screen attached, is a step backward for what a bicycle can mean to child development. Kids riding a stationary bike lose the learning experiences that come from roaming their neighborhood on foot or on bike. The experts also say that active play like tag or bicycling prepares children to succeed in life because they interact with people and build problem-solving skills. Outdoor play helps kids create categories, like the different types of houses or dogs in their neighborhood. Little Tykes doesn't feel the Pelican should or will replace a regular bicycle. The company wants to give kids an option for a safe and engaging experience alongside mom and dad's stationary bike.
I was just about to say, whatever happened outside? And I want to be fair, because I don't have children, right? And so I can only go from what I observe from parents and what I seem to observe from parents. Honestly, it's just an overwhelming desire to keep their kids safe. You know, like that's a big thing for them, is that they want to keep their kids safe. And I hear people who are of my generation and they talk about, I can't believe our parents just let us roam around outside and do all this stuff. What were they doing? So forth and so on. But there's no evidence to indicate that the world today is less safe than the world that we grew up in. We hear more stories. We find out more things. But I got no evidence that this world is any more unsafe. And like what my man was talking about there about, you know, the development angle of just being outside and roaming and seeing things and learning them or whatever it is. Like, you think about this. If somebody asks you to give directions, if you moved into your house like 2-3 years ago, somewhere in there, and somebody asked you to give directions to get to your house, I'm sure you could do it. But before you could do it, like, okay, you're going to pass by the Taco Bell. Then when you get past the Taco Bell, it's going to be the next light and da-da-da, you know, and all this stuff. But we do so much with the GPS and everything and how to get to these places that, like, I would, like, do kids have that muscle in that same way? And I guess maybe they do because they're not the ones looking at the GPS, right? You know, so they're in the car, they might be able to do those things. But being inside all the time ain't the groove. It's just not it. What that sounds like, that bike is going to be, to me, I could be wrong. That looked like a fat farm. That looked like y'all trying to get your chubby child to shed some of them pounds, but you don't want to have to go outside with them. You want to make them do it. That's what that sounds like to me. Like, what's going to be on that screen for that kid? It's going to look like he in a dungeon, like he working out with Mike Tyson.
Yeah, my only thought on it was whether or not, like, okay, I guess not everybody lives in a neighborhood where they can be riding their bikes around and stuff. You're simulating being able to ride a bike for someone, but yeah, it's not the real thing. They're not learning how to ride a bike.
And I got news for you. The people who don't have neighborhoods that are amenable to riding bikes cannot afford baby Peloton.
Yes.
Just gonna throw that out there.
All right, this last story comes from science. Here it is.
I'm Scott Newman with NPR News. A team of scientists from Tufts University, the University of Vermont at Burlington, and Harvard have discovered an entirely new form of self-replication. A few years ago, these same scientists had developed these organisms they call xenobots, which were assembled from stem cells taken from an African clawed frog. In the laboratory, they recognized that these organisms had a tendency to spin, and as they would spin, they would create piles of whatever was in their petri dish besides them. So the scientists decided to try putting different things in the petri dish to see what they would do with it. So one of the things they did was they put stem cells of the same type that the xenobots were made out of in their petri dish. And what happened was that the organisms would spin, put these stem cells into piles, and then they would adhere and basically assemble copies of the original xenobots. They've never seen this before in organisms. They've seen it at the molecular level, but they've never seen it in organisms. And so this is pretty exciting. It's really an entirely new form of replication. It's not exactly reproduction, because that would imply that genetic material is being passed from parent to offspring. This is simply making copies of the xenobots. But the implications could be, you know, significant down the road, because these xenobots are being studied as possible vehicles for finding cancer in bodies, or maybe trapping microplastics in the ocean. So the ability of them to self-replicate and continue this process could be invaluable down the road.
Shoot them all. Kill them all. Every single one of them. Kill all of them. Round them up. Kill them all. I'll watch. In fact, I want to watch to make sure it gets done. This has gone too far already. Every single one of these robots has to be destroyed. Every single one.
Feels like some sort of thing from The Simpsons, where you got something with three eyes going around in a big tank and everybody's like, ooh, wow, exciting.
Yeah, it's really kill them all, man. Like, somebody has to nuke every single one of them. This sounds like a horror movie. How does this not sound? The robots are multiplying and none of you dummies are like, hey, that might be a problem.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So I thought about a topic for this week's voicemails. Worst interviews ever. Like, worst interview that you've had, worst interview that you've participated in somehow. Got some interesting responses from all different sides of the equation. Our first one comes from BB in Dallas. Here it is.
Hey, I wanted to tell you about the time where I went on an interview, you know, did all of my research, did my market analysis. It was one of those three panel interviews where you have a total of three separate interviews. But they asked me why I wanted to work for this company, and I go ahead and tell them that, hey, my uncle has driven, you know, your trucks for years and years, and said he wouldn't drive anything else. And I continue to mention the name of the trucking company, the trucking manufacturer, and interview went well, getting positive feedback. And then as I was leaving, one of the engineers told me the correct name of the company, and it didn't register. And then throughout the interview, I realized I had been talking about their competitor the entire time. So after I said that, I was 100% positive that I was not going to get that job.
Damn, dog. So he's saying that he was just throwing out numbers and the numbers were for the ops? Dang, that's a rough play, dog.
Unbelievably bad.
Wow.
And not even for like the wrong company, like it was just some out there company, but like the direct competitor.
Yes, yes. Like not just some shit that they didn't even know what she was talking about.
Wouldn't drive anything else.
Right then and there, it's a wrap for you.
This next one comes from Ray in LA. Here it is.
I'm a social media manager and a producer in film marketing. Basically, I did a job interview with one of the Shark Tank members for their social media feeds. And so a long time ago, somebody in the industry taught me basically approach the job as if you already have it, and tell them exactly what you do, you know, first day type stuff. So I take a look at all their Instagram, social media feeds, everything, and I see tons of things wrong. I then start to write all these things down, go to the interview, kill it. I'm doing great. And so, you know, feeling a little bit big, I go and I tell them, hey, look, you've got these issues. This is wrong. This is wrong. All these things are wrong. They go, okay, thank you so much. We appreciate everything. We'll get right back to you. The next day, I saw they had fixed all of the actual issues with their social media. And then they told me, hey, we're not going to move on with your job application. So I got played, gave them some free advice. After that, their social media really didn't improve. I'm pretty sure they just didn't hire anybody. Just throwing it out there.
Yo, man, that happens, dog. Like, yeah, like, wow, what a great idea. We don't, like, that'll be me, well, you. But that, we can do something with that.
Would be a shame if that idea somehow fell into the wrong hands.
I can't even really be mad at them, though. They're like, yo, I mean, who am I to turn down a good idea? How arrogant must I be? You know what I'm saying? Damn, tough play.
Last one comes from John in Ohio. It's a good one to close this out. Here it is.
So keep in mind, as of now, I'm a retired fire chief. But I had joined the fire service back in 1986. Have just a little over a year under my belt. The state fire marshal's office advertises for a fire inspector's job. I'm a fire inspector. Cool. I'll do it. So I go down, I interview. And the panel that I'm meeting is the state fire marshal, the lead of the fire marshal's bureau, inspection bureau, and another fire inspector for the state. So they're asking me all these questions, and I'm telling you, I am killing it. I'm killing it. Well, then I'm asked the question, well, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I looked at the state fire marshal and said, well, I don't know that I'll have your job, but in 5 years, I'd like to be the supervisor of both of you guys. Now, to me, what I was trying to do was say, hey, I'm a go-getter. I look forward. I work hard. The look that came across the faces of all three of them was like I had done something very, very wrong. Now, I don't know if that was supposed to be the last question of the interview, but I know that it was the last question of the interview. I didn't get the job. The next time I talked to the state fire marshal's office was because I had to call them. That's when I realized, being young and dumb at 20 years old, you probably should not say shit like that in front of people you're trying to get a job from. All right, y'all take it easy.
No, man, I get exactly what you were thinking. You were like, I would like your jobs because you will have been promoted and moved on to bigger and better things. I mean, 5 years from now, yeah, you're going to be doing the same shit. Now, they might have been doing that job for 25 years and you didn't know. But he's like, yes, I am assuming that you will move on to bigger and better things and then I will be able to slide into your seat. No, all they heard was, I'm coming for you.
And that stuff that you get asked about, like, once you've already had a job and you're talking about goals and all that stuff, like, what do you want to do in 5 years? Oh, I'd like to be something like you're doing.
Yes. Hey, Gabe, play the music for him right fast.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Yeah, dog, I was like, no, we ain't got no openings for one of those. No, thanks. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. My man Gabe Bassett handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Whitney Kimball at Gizmodo. Check out her story on Friendly Faces for Humanoid Robots at Gizmodo. Thanks to Matt McFarland of CNN Business. Check out his story on a Peloton-like bike for children. And thanks to Scott Newman of NPR. Check out his story about robots that are self-replicating and no one has shot them yet. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.